Unfortunately, it's not just the confidence gremlins in our mind that sometimes sabotage us, but occasionally there are technical gremlins too that thwart us. Unfortunately, they got the better of us this week, and the quality of this week's audio isn't to the usual standard. Please do bear with us though, and listen on for lots of tips on battling confidence issues.
This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson. Careering into Motherhood is on a mission to make coaching more accessible to more women by providing free access to coaches, coaching tools, and advice. And one of the ways we do this is via curated content that's all written and produced by our independent partner coaches and freely available to visitors to our website. Another of the ways we bring you free coaching is via this podcast. I negotiated the first ever director-level job share at the world's largest bank, but seeing how many of my female friends and colleagues were leaving their careers after having children, I have set up and run two successful businesses to help women have the same career opportunities as men once they become parents. Of course, there are societal and systemic changes that need to happen, but I have seen firsthand just how transformational and impactful effective coaching can be for women. And that is why we are making coaching more accessible, more transparent, and helping more women to be where they want to be in the workplace. And on that note, my guest today is Katrina Howells, organisational psychologist and executive coach. Katrina specialises in helping women with confidence issues, imposter syndrome, and getting to where they want to be in their careers, but also finding more inner happiness. Katrina, welcome.
Hi, Jane.
We are obviously a couple of weeks into the new year. So today I wanted to talk a little bit about the work you do with clients to help them not only stay motivated, but also stay focused on their goals. So welcome. And I don't know, have you set yourself any New Year's, I hate the word resolutions, but New Year's goals?
Thank you so much for having me here. It's really exciting to be chatting to you this morning. And it's a very pertinent topic, isn't it? Goals in January. And no, I haven't set myself any New Year's goals because I kind of see it as a year-round thing. My experience with goals is that they tend to be the things that are quite difficult to achieve. If they weren't, we would have achieved them already. And giving yourself big goals in January, which can be a tough time anyway, doesn't tend to work for me. What I know from working with my clients is that small goals worked on throughout the year are much easier to achieve. There are a couple of things to this. We know from social psychology that habits take between 18 and 254 days to form. And therefore, we need a lot of practice to change habits, to change the way we do things. And also, the meaning of your goals is really important. So for myself and my clients, I look at purpose. I look at goals which are hugely meaningful. So if I can give an example of myself, I recently ran 5K, and the thing that got me up into the cold, wet, rainy weather to train was knowing that my daughter wanted to do a run with me. And making it really connected to my life and have a really important meaning helped me achieve something that otherwise I don't think I would have achieved.
It was something that meant something to your daughter, so therefore by connection, obviously, it meant a huge amount to you to be able to do it together. And that was your purpose, you know, on the wet, cold mornings when you were getting up, feeling really not like training. But that was what drove you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you had a situation recently where you managed to achieve something that you know, was really difficult?
Yeah, funny you should ask. Yes, so the launch of of our new website, which this podcast is not just an advert for that, but it was a really tough time. My husband was in Australia, my son, and then I came down with COVID, and yet I was really driven by this passion to get this site up and running, to get the business started, get it going. And I had given myself first week of December as my deadline, which back in the summer seemed perfectly doable. And then obviously these things came in last minute. And yes, it was a really tough time.
Yeah, so there's deep purpose there for you in this careering into motherhood and how you can serve mothers in the workplace. And can you see how having that deep purpose helped you achieve something that was really difficult and tough?
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I mean, I kind of thought, not only had I gone out on social media and what have you to the Facebook group and said, look, we're going to do this. I also had all the 30 coaches depending upon me. And as you say, I am really, really driven by this need to see change in the workplace for women. And there is never a great time. You know, there's always something that comes up, isn't there? And I think that's one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, that, you know, when it's so easy, you start, whether it's January or whenever it may be, you start a new sort of commitment to yourself to change behaviour or change something or make something happen. And I think especially for working mums, everything else seems to gradually creep in and take priority, whether that is walking the dog or whether that is, you know, clothing and feeding your children. We do, stereotypical as it is, we do tend to subordinate our wishes and desires and so on and kick that can down the road. So how do you help your clients with that level of accountability without obviously beating them around the heads with yet another set of tasks that they have to achieve?
That's a really good question. I work with my clients a lot around self-compassion and kindness. And as women, we often, as you say, put ourselves at the bottom of the pile. We can be very compassionate towards our immediate family, our friends, our colleagues at work, but we find it really hard to demonstrate that same kindness towards ourselves. So I work with my clients to help making that a more natural choice. And that doesn't mean not being kind or compassionate to anyone else. It doesn't mean that you have to stop doing that. But it does mean making decisions which also support you in achieving your goals. So that mix of having real meaning to your goals and being really kind to yourself around them starts you on that journey of really being able to make the decisions which are right for you.
How do you do that? Because as you said at the start, you know, it takes hundreds of days to change behaviours. And something like when you are so used to, I guess, being unkind or less kind to yourself, not prioritising yourself, that's something that is learnt over years and years. So that, you know, that I can't imagine how you go about helping your clients with that.
It's not a quick win, but then I don't tend to help my clients with the quick wins because they can do those things themselves. But first, it's about noticing. So it's about noticing when you're critical of yourself, the kind of things you say to yourself, when you're most likely to say them. So I work with my clients to help them identify the narrative they have around themselves, the critique they have of themselves. And we do all naturally critique ourselves. It's an evolutionary trait. We need to keep ourselves safe, but we overuse it and it becomes detrimental to us. In a way, it moves us forward. So if we beat ourselves up, it feels like we make ourselves do the difficult things. But over time, it becomes quite negative. It inhibits our confidence to some extent. So what I do is I help my clients notice the things they're saying to themselves. And I help them build a more positive narrative.
But how do you do that? Sorry to push, but, you know, I think if you asked anyone, certainly any woman, you know, would you like to be a bit kinder? Well, there's something to say, isn't it? You know, the voice that we talk to ourselves, and sometimes we wouldn't even dream of talking, we certainly wouldn't dream of talking to our children with that voice. But, you know, having someone say, okay, you mustn't do that, or I'm sure you don't say you mustn't, but, you know, you ought not to do that, or you won't, is one thing. But then what are the specific tools that one can use to implement that?
So I take them on a step-by-step journey, really. So the first step is noticing, and I set them tasks to do, and we do that together. So I don't set homework, we discuss what would work for them, and they come up with the actions that they want to take. The next step involves things like visualizations to help them connect with that kindness to themselves. It can include daily practices, mantras, grounding exercises, embodying positive states rather than negative states. So I work with the mind and the body. We hold all our emotions in our body. If you're anxious, you feel it in your chest and often your stomach. And that anxiety comes first and then gets sent up to the brain. So we identify where that anxiety sits, and we create almost a persona for it to make it easy to identify. So we create a name, a character for it. Yes, yeah.
Actually sort of personalise or
put... Absolutely, and give it a name, and then you can really identify it much easier and much quicker. And it's very important not to battle with this character, but just to thank it and give it less airtime. You have to do the other side of it then as well. You have to create the positive, so the positive neural networks, that ability to connect to kindness to yourself. So we work at where that does come up in the body. How do you sit and stand when you are being kind to yourself? You know, if it works for people, we can create a character for that as well. And connecting with that in the body then leads to more positivity in the mind. So I've done all this for myself. I know it works, but I also know, you know, it takes time and practice. But what you're doing is you're slightly rewiring your mind. So when we were at school, a lot of us had, you know, some perfectionist tendencies. It was really easy to do what we were asked to do everything right, to get the grades. And it felt good. You know, it's an endorphin boost when you get a good grade, when your teachers and your parents are pleased with you. But it doesn't serve us to be that perfectionist so much in adult life. We can't always get everything right. And the fear of getting things wrong holds us back. Fear of not wanting to be messy and sometimes put our hands up and say, I've got it wrong. That can really inhibit us from being our true selves, from really pushing ourselves forward, from really taking those opportunities that are out there, because we're worried that we're going to fail.
And I think especially as mums or as parents, let's say, I don't even know if that is gendered. I just know from my other mum friends kind of thing, we're all so pushing for this ideal of perfection, whether it's with our children, you know, that's before we even start talking about our careers and things like that. But I want to talk, because I think it touches upon this stuff as well. I know you do a lot of work with women on sort of imposter syndrome. And, you know, we talked about confidence, the link between confidence and achievement. You tend to look at keeping it in the world of work. You look at business people who've been hugely successful and you think, gosh, they must be hugely confident. They must be really confident. And if I don't have that confidence, then I'm almost self-sabotaging whatever it is I want to achieve, because I'm sort of saying, well, I'm never going to be in that bracket because I'm not that confident. You know, and then you lead to this sort of, there's the sort of imposter syndrome around that as well. When you do maybe achieve, you do get the job, and then you're thinking, God, I shouldn't be up here with all these other people. You know, I lack confidence. So I'm just really interested in your thoughts in that area. You've changed careers yourself. Even I would look at career coaches and think, gosh, you must be so confident to be able to lead others where they're sort of scared or fearful to go.
the phrase that springs to mind a bit here is that I think the people that do appear confident are probably doing a bit of faking it till you make it. I think everyone suffers, men, women, from a certain amount of imposter syndrome. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And this links back to, I'm going to talk about the narrative we have about ourselves, what we believe we can do and what we believe we can't do for whatever reason. And changing that narrative, whilst not easy, can happen. And it's about the way you think about yourself. So I've spoken about the neural networks in your mind. Some of ours are really trained towards the negative, towards critiquing ourselves, picking ourselves up for every little thing we say. You know, for example, walking out of a meeting and thinking, oh gosh, that was a really silly thing to say. What do people think of me? You know, that's the kind of the start of what creates imposter syndrome. Whereas if you're able to notice that kind of negative self-talk and say, okay, well, what did I do good in that meeting? What did I say that was really useful? What was positive about that meeting? What are the opportunities here for me? Obviously, that's easier said than done, but it's about practice. It's about practicing asking yourself the more positive, open-ending questions and, you know, getting support for it from others. So social support is really important.
What do you mean by that? So if we're, again, sort of talking in a work context, somebody who's perhaps going for a new job, got a new job, has some goals for this year, but has these confidence wobbles, short of, you know, having a good chat to our friends and as we tend to do. But what else do you mean by social support?
So finding that person or people who have our backs at work and who maybe we can have some kind of reciprocal arrangement with, where we ask people to give us feedback, people that we'll share our goals with. This is what I'm going to try and achieve this week. What are you trying to achieve? Can we report back? That's a lot more helpful than keeping it all in your own head.
Yes, I can imagine. Just even that process of verbalising it and putting it out there, I guess, starts to get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it becomes more real, more potentially achievable.
Yes. And when it comes to setting these goals, you know, one of the things that I suffer from is certainly setting a goal that is almost unachievable from the start. So whether it's around, you know, health and fitness, or whether it's very much around work and what I want to achieve, I have a tendency, and I think a lot of women do, to set goals and just see them in their magnitude and then either not really know how to break them down into step by steps to be able to get there. And therefore, we end up sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater and just think, well, that was a load of rubbish. I was never going to achieve that anyway, or just never actually making it and feeling quite disillusioned and disappointed. When a client comes to you and talks about, you know, you get to the point where you are able to set some achievable goals, how do you put in place a kind of step by step? How do you break things down? How do you talk to your clients about breaking things down?
Again, we come back to purpose, I would say. So, you know, you can set a huge, meaningful goal, but if it isn't really important for you, then it's hard to achieve and it will go down to the bottom of our list. But if you can connect in some way to why it's important, then it's more achievable. And I think this connects to confidence as well. I always think the things that we procrastinate about are not because we're not organized enough to do them, but because we're scared of not achieving them in the way that we want to.
Certainly can be that, in my case anyway.
So you hit the nail on the head with small changes. We're unlikely to make huge changes very quickly, but if we take it step by step and we put together a plan which is meaningful, which is achievable, in small increments, then it's much more likely to happen. But to be honest, if my clients come to me wanting to set goals, we don't normally work together on how to achieve a goal. We work on what's preventing them from achieving that. So we would probably go a bit deeper and understand why on the surface this feels like a goal that they want to achieve and what's stopping them achieving it.
Yes, yes, you're right. Of course, once you have your goal, it's really a case, I guess, of project management to make sure that you're breaking that down and making progress towards it. And Katrina, if a client comes to you taking a step back slightly and they just know they need to make some sort of change, whether it's that they feel slightly paralysed by the number of choices that are running through their mind, or whether it is that they just don't know where to start. You know, working mums have borne the brunt of so many challenging situations in the last couple of years. It's not surprising that many of us just don't really know where to start or which direction in which to go. Where would you start with a client in that sort of circumstance?
So I would start by asking some open questions, really, around what they want to achieve, what they find fulfilling. And often what comes back to me is some kind of paralysis or fear. So people deep down know what they want, but for whatever reason, they often feel like they can't achieve it, or they can't have it all, or they don't deserve it all. And as mothers, that's often where we are, especially over the last couple of years. You know, it's been really hard, and it has, you know, I'd definitely say at times it got to me, it definitely beat me down a bit. So it's about starting fresh. The question I always ask myself is, okay, this has been tough. What's the opportunity for me here? What can I find out of this? You know, without negating that this has been hard and difficult, what can I grow out of this? What did I learn over the last 2 years about myself? Because I think we've all learnt an awful lot about ourselves and our ability to keep going, our resilience. I mean, we've all been amazing in what we've achieved. So my focus would be very much on helping people shift to the positive of what they have achieved, rather than look back on how difficult it's been, and help people to see, you know, what that future could look like for them in a really kind of strong and positive way.
Well, I feel as though we covered so much in that half hour, and I probably divulged a bit too openly some of my own self-sabotage moments. That was like a personal therapy session. But I'm definitely going to try some of those techniques that Katrina recommended, like giving that gremlin voice in my head a character and maybe even a name. Keith, I think, sounds like a good one for me. Get back in your box, Keith. You can find out more about Katrina and working with her via our website. Just go to www.careeringintomotherhood.com and search Katrina Howells, double L. You'll find all the information about her qualifications, testimonials and fees, along with those of 29 other qualified coaches. I'll be back in a fortnight with more insight into the world of female executive coaching. Until then, thanks for listening.